昨日愛を運んでくれた人、雪嵐に消えた。昨日春を探してくれたやつ、熱い血の海に沈んだ。青い月に吠えても愛は戻らない。
Well, hello, welcome to the Mazer Patrol podcast. It is October, that spooky season when we want to, you know, watch Godzilla movies still, but we also want to, you know, supplement that with witches and vampires and werewolves. And being the Toho fans that we are, we can watch House or the Bloodthirsty Trilogy, or, you know, even Toho's werewolf movie, The Crest of the Wolf. Of course, that hasn't ever been translated, so I don't know what to say about that. If only there was somewhere I could look that was like a good guide to Toho's tokusatsu movies that hadn't been translated or released in the States before. John LeMay, do you have any idea where one could find such a book?
Well, yes, Kevin. I am the author of a new book. It's called Kaiju for Hipsters, 101 Alternative Monster Movies. No, that's your book. That's your book. Actually, I would say your book and my book are both pretty similar in that we cover these really fun movies that, like, Godzilla fans would probably enjoy if they just seek them out. But thank you for the plug on my book. My book is called Terror of the Lost Tokusatsu Films, and it does cover The Crest of the Wolf from Toho in 1973.
So this is an interesting one. It seems like something that sort of slipped through the distribution cracks as a movie goes, because it was that point in the 70s where the movies were getting a little bit more exploitation-y, and so this could have gone the way of, you know, those Lone Wolf and Cubs and other things that went sort of to the grindhouse type of theaters. But I think because this is a monster movie, maybe they didn't know what to do with it. You know, there's no putting this on television with an AIP dub or anything like that, right?
Yeah, so it's only like 83 minutes, and there's a lot of blood and violence and nudity at crucial story moments, so I think that's why nobody really ever tried to bother to edit it for American television or American theatrical release. It just would have been too hard. And it's also, you know, for American audiences, it's very Japanese, kind of a strange movie for Westerners.
Yeah, so the wolf guy, the whole, it has an interesting history as a franchise that is a little bit difficult to unravel. So correct me if I'm wrong, it started in 1969 as a novel by Kazumasa Hirai?
That's exactly right. And then the next year it was adapted into a manga, and I think the manga was actually a bit more popular than the novel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and like the manga was a prequel to the novel or something along those lines, right?
It's actually an alternate, it's a retelling of the novel, but with a different ending. So, you know, I don't think we need to say spoiler alert, because the thing is, if you actually watch the Horror of the Wolf movie, you can't understand it anyways, so I mean, you really want the spoilers so you can understand it. But so spoiler alert, in Horror of the Wolf, the novel, and I think the movie as well, the main character, Akira Unigami, the werewolf, he dies. But in the manga, he actually lives. So I almost feel like in the manga they decided maybe we want to do sequels and give everybody a happy ending. So that's the big difference that I can tell, is he lives at the end of the manga and he dies at the end of the book.
Okay. Yeah, there's I think we need to like clarify a little bit, because Wolf Guy is a big franchise, and it's been redone a couple of different times. So like if you look right now, you'll find translations of the Wolf Guy manga from 2007, which is not the same as the original one from the 1970s.
No, and I have actually looked at that one myself. I just recently read the novel, so I'm really only familiar with the novel, Toho's film, and also the 1992 direct-to-video anime, and that's all I know.
Yeah, so there is the more popular of the two that you can find translations for is the one from 2007, which is translated as Wolf and Crest, and it's basically this the same story as the original manga, but updated for, you know, the characters have the internet now. But that was one that made a little bit of a splash. It was one where it actually got taken down by a few of the manga sites when it was making the rounds because too many rape scenes.
Yep. Quite a few of those in the novel and probably the original manga from the 1970s as well, and the 1973 film.
Yeah, well, it's all the same story, at least for that stretch of it. It's the first arc, I guess, is Okami no Moncho, or Crest of the Wolf, or Wolf and Crest, or Wolf Crest. I've seen it translated a bunch of ways, but you can sort of get the gist, right?
Yeah, and so for the people who are unaware of Wolf Guy's story, it's not really a typical werewolf story. How it begins in almost all the versions is you've got a scene where this school teacher, her name is Akiko, is walking down the street, and she sees this street gang assault a young man. His name's Akira Unagami, and she sees him get stabbed. And she freaks out, and she passes out, and when she comes to and she's awake, she sees the young man is gone, and then the next day when she goes to her school, she has a new student, and it turns out to be Akira, you know, the young man who she saw stabbed the night before. And she basically, over the course of the story, learns that he's an immortal werewolf, and that's why when she saw him get stabbed, he didn't really get hurt, and he was healed up the next day. And at this new school that he's at, Akira makes an enemy in the form of Do Haguro, which is the son of a big Yakuza boss, and Do basically runs the school. In some versions, it's a high school. In some versions, it's a middle school, but Do Haguro and Akira, they're always enemies. They basically, short version is, they kind of fight over Akiko, the teacher. I think they both have romantic feelings for her. Haguro kidnaps Akiko, and then he and Akira get in a big bloody fight, and where we get into big differences is the ending of the novel, the ending of the manga, and the ending of the film. All three have different endings, which we can probably discuss at some point over the course of this podcast. But that's the story, you know, in a nutshell.
Yeah, so the main character, Akira Inugami, a mythological type of creature, basically dog gods, but so he's actually a werewolf, right?
Yes, yeah. And so, okay, so I think a lot of Toho fans, or a decent number of Toho fans, have probably taken the time to watch part of this movie or watch clips of the movie. And a big part of the movie is you see Akira as a young boy, and he's playing with these wolves, which are really German shepherds, you know, in real life in the movie, because that's what they use for filming. And I always thought when I watched the movie that these were supposed to be other werewolves. But when I read the novel, I learned that only Akira is a werewolf, and he's just basically playing with these wolves out in the wild, and that's all they are, is wolves. And Akira is one of the few werewolves in existence. But he is basically a werewolf who can turn into like a half man, half wolf, or he can also turn into just a full wolf.
One of the details that I love is that he keeps using the excuse when he turns into the wolf that, you know, it's just a wolf mask, and everyone seems to just roll with that.
Yeah, and okay, so that's like a really good point. So the first time I ever watched the film, I really wanted to see it, even though Horror of the Wolf has not been subtitled, to my knowledge, not to Kyle Bird's knowledge, not to Kevin's knowledge. We just don't know of an English subtitled print out there. There's not an international English dub that I know of. I don't think there is one at all. So the first time I saw it, I thought it was really weird because they do have a scene where the teacher, Akiko, goes to see Akira and she sees him with the head of a wolf but the body of like a man. And I really didn't know what was going on until I read the book. And like you just said, Kevin, in the book he tells his teacher, he says, "Oh, this is just a mask. I got beat up so badly that I don't want to show my face, so I'm going to wear this mask." And again, watching the film with no understanding, I had no idea what was going on in that scene.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that the fact that maybe the mask in the movie isn't that amazingly, you know, done, might make that more believable.
Yeah, it's almost like they had some sort of real wolf hair, I think, is what they made it with, but it really looks more like something from Dai's Yokai trilogy. That's what it really looks like. So there's no sense of realism to it at all.
So this movie adaptation, this was done, it was written by Jun Fukuda, is that right?
That's correct, and I wish I knew more about it. I don't know why Jun Fukuda was called in only to write it. I don't know if he was ever considered as a potential director or not. But I do know the other writers with Fukuda was Shiro Ishimori, and he didn't really write anything kaiju-related that we'd be interested in discussing. And the other writer on the film was Masashi Matsumoto, and he was actually the film's director, so he was another writer on it. Toho apparently acquired the rights to the novel fairly quickly, because what I read in Toho Complete Special Effects Works, which is just a history book on Toho, I believe they acquired the rights to the Wolf Guy novel in 1970, at about the time that they were having their big studio shakeup where they did away with the old studio system. So apparently, you know, that probably stalled the development of the project until about 1973 when they finally got it done and released. But they hopped on it pretty quick, apparently, because the novel came out in 1969.
Yeah, and that was just the very first incarnation of the novel was 69. So they really jumped on that. I imagine the manga is probably what really made them jump on it.
Yeah, I get the impression the manga was more popular than the novel. So I don't know why they chose to adapt the novel rather than the manga, so that's interesting.
Yeah, but, I mean, Hirai was an accomplished author. I mean, the thing that he's probably best known for is Ape Man, or is released in the States as Tobor the Eighth Man, that 60s anime, but he also did like Genma Tyson, which was adapted into the movie Harmageddon. So he had some credentials, so it could have been one of those things that like as soon as he announced he was doing a project, people were clamoring to pick up the rights, you know, product on scene.
Yeah, and Toho was actually pretty good about that, because I think they also snatched up the rights to the novel for Submersion of Japan, like the same year that the movie came out, and the same for Prophecies of Nostradamus was also a novel that they snatched up again within a year and made the movie. So they did apparently move pretty quick when it came to that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of other credentials, we have Richiro Manabe on the soundtrack for the movie, you know, who's most famous for maybe not the most popular Godzilla soundtracks, but he did some.
Yeah, and he's definitely a different animal from Masaru Sato and Ifukube. But when you listen to his scores on like the Bloodthirsty trilogy, they're still kind of weird, but they're much more fitting than they were for the Godzilla films. And I would say the same is true for Crest of the Wolf. And it's also got a really good original song by, I can't remember the artist, but the songs that they have in the movie are also pretty well done. And for a Manabe score, I'd say it's pretty well done, too, throughout the film.
Yeah, and then the director, Masashi Matsumoto, there's not a whole lot else that I see him attached to in that capacity, but He was an assistant director on Gorath, and apparently he did he directed Technopolis 21C, so that's his Yoshimitsu Banno connection. So
interesting.
All comes together.
Yeah. And something else that's actually interesting about Wolf Guy and Submersion of Japan and Godzilla vs. Megalon is those movies were actually special commemorative releases for Toho's 40th anniversary. And maybe every single Toho movie produced in 1973, maybe they were all commemorative releases, but I kind of get the impression that there were only like a select few films, maybe like 10 films that year that were singled out as like a commemorative special release. And so I know that Horror of the Wolf was one, and again, surprisingly enough, Godzilla vs. Megalon was one, even though most fans consider it, you know, one of the worst movies of the series. It's kind of funny to think of it as a 40th anniversary commemorative release, but it was.
Toho was hurting at the time. They didn't really have that many movies come out in 1973, right? So
yeah, maybe they didn't even have 10 movies come out that year. I really wouldn't even know. They did put a lot of money into Submersion of Japan, and it shows, and it was a big hit. So it's not like they couldn't do a big budget movie in 1973. I guess they just couldn't do as many is what it was.
Sure. So, I mean, after Submersion of Japan, which is, you know, the big movie, and then, you know, Godzilla vs. Megalon is sort of the champion festival, this would be like special effects movie number three.
Yeah. And Horror of the Wolf, actually, now that I've read the novel, it's not like the novel was some big elaborate thing that they had to scale down to make into a film. Actually, it's the novel and the film, they're very close. And in terms of things that were cut out, I don't think anything was ever cut out of the film for the sake of the budget. I think it was more an issue of time constraints and tightening the story, because there's very few deleted scenes, really. And the only big deleted scene is the epilogue of the novel, which is not in the film, which we can talk about later, because it's really, really interesting if you've seen the film to talk about what you don't know because you haven't read the novel yet.
So one thing that you mentioned in your book was that there is some thought put into transitioning the character to a high school student because Spider-Man was popular. Is that right?
Yes. And okay, so here's the thing. I know in the novel he's actually a middle grade kid. Mm-hmm. Well, it depends what you call a middle grade kid. You know, when I went to middle school, you were a seventh grader or an eighth grader. But I believe back in the 1960s, middle schools had 7th grade, 8th grade, and 9th grade. So in this case, he's a 9th grader, but he's in middle school in the novel. But they transition it to high school for the film and maybe for the manga as well. But yeah, you're right. I read that either on the Japanese Wikipedia page or maybe in the Toho history book that because Spider-Man was a high school student, they thought it would be more interesting to make Akira a high school student, maybe, so he could be more like a superhero or something.
Yeah, that's an unexpected source of inspiration.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it also makes sense that, you know, we probably don't want to have, you know, middle school age actors running around the set with all of the, you know, violence and sexuality and whatnot. You know, high schoolers can get away with hiring full adults and calling them kids, and you know,
yeah,
just for the sake of propriety, you know, when you have, you know, the adult teacher that's having perhaps a romantic relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, you know, in the novel Akira, he's only in ninth grade and he falls in love with his teacher, and actually it's more like the teacher falls in love with him more so than he falls in love with her, so I think it's more believable that they made him an older student in the film.
So the novel is it's available right now in English. It was first printed in English back in the 80s, and I had a couple blog posts lamenting how terribly out of print it was. Because they released the first two novels, both with cover art by the great Rumiko Takahashi, who's, you know, one of the best mangaka ever, and then they fell into a bit of obscurity. But now, thanks to somebody on Kindle, has decided to release them all, and they apparently have full endorsement because the wolfguy.com Japanese website has a link to it. So.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you checked that out. I mean, I was going to read it either way, but I'm glad to know it's legitimate, and I, you know, they're getting their royalties, so that's good.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what because there were two novels that were both released in English, both with that Wolf Crest title initially, and I understand that that's the title of the first novel in the Young Wolf Guy series, because there were two that were going concurrently, the Adult Wolf Guy and the Young Wolf Guy. But
and we should probably clarify for our listeners too that in Japan the film is Crest of the Wolf, but for international release Toho gave it the title of Horror of the Wolf. So sometimes I refer to it as Horror of the Wolf and sometimes Crest of the Wolf, but same thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of alternate titles, which is what I found sort of scrolling through the Japanese Wikipedia as well, is that all of the novels have been released under different publishers under different titles as well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, depending on how you want to translate things, you know, things get moved around quite a bit as well. But yeah, Horror of the Wolf is the official English title, but it's never officially been released in English, so I guess it's mostly just for licensing purposes at this point.
Kind of like with Zone Fighter. Zone Fighter is actually Meteor Man Zone, but they called it Zone Fighter for international sale, which never ever happened, and they still call it Zone Fighter. So same type of deal, I guess.
Yeah, so I've actually only seen, you know, clips of the movie, but you've seen the whole thing. What were your general impressions of it overall?
So think of it this way. The first time I ever saw it, I hadn't read the novel, so I had absolutely no clue what was going on, and I still enjoyed it. I really like 1970s-era films. I like the directorial touches, the music, the costumes, that sort of thing. And Crest of the Wolf has a lot of that going for it. It's got really great direction. And again, it was really confusing for me to watch because a lot of the storyline is Akira Unagami getting beat up by this high school gang and he never fights back. And I could never figure out what was going on until I finally read the novel later. But again, just to watch the film, not really understanding the plot, I enjoyed it as much as I could. But once I discovered that the novel was available to read, I went ahead and read it, and it all finally made sense. And I didn't really plan on watching Horror of the Wolf again, but once I read that novel, it made me actually want to watch it again. And I learned that the reason why Akira is always getting beat up, but he doesn't fight back, is because the beatings don't actually hurt him, and he's kind of like it's beneath him to fight these lowly humans, so he'll just let them beat on him and walk all over him until he absolutely has to fight him. And so that was interesting. And another really crazy thing is the film, one of the stars of the film is Toshio Kurosawa, who was the lead in Toho's 1974 Evil of Dracula. He plays what appears to be either a reporter or a detective. And I really didn't know what his function was in the film, but in the novel, this is like the mind blower. In the novel, his character is actually another werewolf. But you do not get that impression in the film. And in fact, I don't actually know if he is a werewolf in the film version, but in the novel he actually is another werewolf, and that's only revealed in the epilogue.
Yeah, and that's a confusing thing, because that character is also named Akira, right? It's Akira Jin instead of Akira Inugami.
Yeah, and again, within, or maybe it's in the Japanese film too, but within the novel, Akiko, the school teacher, she notes, oh, that's an odd coincidence. They're both named Akira and this and that. And And I think it is intentional because they're both werewolves. And this is probably a good place to talk about the climax of all three different versions of Wolf Guy from the 1970s. So the film, you know, it ends with this really bloody fight between Akira and Dohaguro, the main villain. And Akira does manage to kill him. But after he dies, a lot of these Yakuza thugs come in. And Akira then has to fight all of these Yakuza thugs right after he's been mortally wounded. And he manages to kill all of them. And what happens is this Akira Jin, you know, Toshio Kurosawa's character, he shows up. And he saves Akira Unigami and Akiko, the school teacher. And the way that the film ends is you see Akira, and he's bleeding out in the back of Toshio Kurosawa's car as his romantic interest holds him. And you see a vision of Akira as a wolf running through the Alaskan tundra, and he kind of runs up into the sky. And that's where the film ends, and you can kind of get the implication that that's the film's way of saying that, you know, Akira has just died. And the novel confirms it. The novel confirms that Wolf Guy does, in fact, die at the end of the novel. And there's this really lengthy epilogue that's really interesting. It has Akiko, the school teacher. She wakes up really depressed in the hospital. And, you know, because she's in love with Akira, and she realizes that he's now dead. And she goes up to the roof of the hospital. And she's preparing to commit suicide and jump off the roof, and suddenly she hears this wolf howl, and it's the same wolf howl that Akira Unigami always had. So she thinks, oh, Akira's alive, I'm not going to kill myself now. But as the epilogue progresses, she begins to hang out with this Akira Jin some more. And we eventually learn that Akira Jin is also a werewolf, and he howled to stop her from committing suicide because he knew it would at least for a time mislead her into thinking that Akira Unigami was still alive. So basically Akira Jin ends up being kind of like a surprise hero in the novel, and he convinces Akiko to go on living, and he convinces her to go off to Alaska where Akira Unigami is from, and that's basically how the novel ends. And like we already said earlier, the manga changes that to have Akira Unigami live. And you and I both recently, though, we watched this 1992 anime, and this is probably a good time to begin discussing that. What did you think of that anime, Kevin?
It's something where I've always sort of wondered about why it was one of the ones that got sort of passed up for distribution in the U.S., but watching it, it became very clear that there's sort of twofold factors. The first is that for an OVA, the animation was not that impressive, at least in the first episode. It seemed like it got better as it went along. But then the other thing is, this is very much a sequel story, and you're coming in sort of cold in the middle of it.
Yeah, and so that's the irony there. I'm really not an anime guy, so I was probably able to enjoy it a little more than you were, just because I was kind of like not disappointed in the ending of Horror of the Wolf. I thought it was actually a good ending, but you know how it is when you have that tragic ending. You don't really want to see these characters that you like die. So I kind of liked it because this anime is a sequel, definitely not to the manga. It's a sequel to the book where Akira Unigami has died, and it basically finds an excuse to have him not die, and you kind of get a reunion between he and Akiko. And it's so if you hated the way that the book and the movie ends, I think the anime, you probably will enjoy it. Now, that being said, I enjoyed it initially when I discovered how it was a sequel. But as it went on, it was kind of weird because I didn't really even feel like Wolf Guy was the main character. It's more like it's called Wolf Guy, and Wolf Guy is part of this big ensemble cast of characters, but he's really not the central focus. Would you agree?
Yeah. And this is two different novels, the Grudge Song of the Wolf and Requiem of a Wolf, apparently spliced together. And I don't know quite where each component comes from, because it does tell sort of a single overarching story, but it does seem to be like one half of it is Wolf Guy and his story, and then another is the, I guess, sort of mercenary dude that's tracking him down.
Yeah, it's almost like they give as much or more screen time to the villain as they do, you know, Wolf Guy, which I thought was kind of odd.
But I did like the sort of increased scope of interesting things that were going on in it, and the basically the premise is that he's still alive, but then the is it a shadowy government organization or a crime syndicate that somebody picks him up for some experimentation, and they want to.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's kind of from the same era as Godzilla versus Biollante, and it's some sort of American bio corporation like Biomajor. That I think they're kind of like the main villains, is what I. It got kind of confusing, but I know that like an American bioengineering company like the one in Biollante is one of the villains.
Yeah, and so there's a similar theme that goes on in. If we rewind for a little bit, in 1975, Toei is a competitor for Toho. They also licensed the Wolf Guy series, but they went for the adult Wolf Guy novels, in which Akira's grown up and now he's like a detective or a reporter or some sort of role like that where he investigates things. Exactly how is not clear. And he's played by Sonny Chiba in the movie. You know, you never see Sonny Chiba transform in that movie, Wolf Guy Enraged Lycanthrope, which is now available on Blu-ray from Arrow Films, I believe. But there's a whole subplot in that movie where people have been trying to use the werewolf blood to create super soldiers. So I think that there's a parallel thread that's going on across these things that I'm assuming if that's in the source material, then they're both going on in both novel series at the same time.
Ah, very. See, I didn't know that. That's very interesting. And I kind of wanted to ask you, so with the adult Wolf Guy series, do you know when that was actually, was that created in the 1970s as well, I assume?
Yeah, so the young Wolf Guy and adult Wolf Guy were running at the same time, which seems so confusing, but apparently people were able to keep it straight.
Well, there's not really much suspense for the young Wolf Guy series if you know there's already a old Wolf Guy series, so.
He feels like such a different character. He feels almost the same as the role that Jin has in the young Wolf Guy series, in that he's, you know, this sort of maybe a reporter, maybe a detective type of going around investigating stuff, dude.
Yeah. I wish that I had time to watch that 1975 toy version. It's just you and I kind of decided to do this on the spur of the moment, and it's kind of like, well, we better do it while we have the time, right? Because who knows what'll happen. But I haven't actually seen the Sonny Chiba version yet, but I want to.
It's really crazy. Like, you can tell that they have like three different stories that they wanted to do, and they just rather than picking and choosing, they're just like, okay, we'll just do them all.
Okay, so you have seen that one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He has like five different love interests in the movie, and you're just like, who, what is going on now?
Is there some sort of were-tiger in that movie or something? There's something with a tiger?
Yeah, so there's The movie begins with sort of the instigating event is that he's walking down the street and he sees somebody getting attacked by what the person says they're being attacked by a tiger. And you don't see the tiger itself. It's invisible, but it's like a hellhound type of thing where the person who's being attacked sees the tiger, which, you know, you get these great gore effects of the person being torn apart. But at the same time, I'm sort of like, yeah, but I wanted to see a tiger.
Yeah.
Toei is not as big on the budgets as Toho is, so I think that might be part of the reason why they didn't really go for monster effects in this. And the, you know, this was a Sonny Chiba vehicle, and it's the same director as like Sister Street Fighter.
Mm.
So It's more on the action fighty side, but they do have the super soldiers that are, you know, injected with werewolf blood, which just makes them, you know, stronger, and then they heal faster. So you see Sonny Chiba like get his intestines torn out, and he can just like shuffle them back in and heal up. But part of me is still like, but I wish I'd seen him, you know, in the full like wolf mask like the Toho movie has.
Who knows? Maybe they made one and Chiba refused to wear it. Who knows?
That is possible. I mean, he was a hit star at the time, and maybe wouldn't want to have had his face covered up with a mask.
And we'll say, oh no, go ahead.
and you know, you watch the special features on the Blu-ray set, and it's clear that the director, like when he's being interviewed about it, it's very much like when Jun Fukuda's interviewed about his Godzilla movies. He's just like, I don't really care about this movie.
It's so weird because that's not something you would see in America. In America, even if they hate it, at least initially, they'll pretend like they like it and they'll wait a few years before they badmouth it, you know, but I guess in Japan it's just different.
Well, I mean, also so much time has passed since these movies were made in the 70s, so getting interviewed in retrospect. And then, you know, there's probably some, with that old guard of directors, you know, they're like, oh, this isn't proper cinema. The genre fiction is, you know, it's when you get to the, I don't know, probably the new wave of people in the 70s and 80s where they really embrace the more popcorn mainstream type of entertainment and unashamedly will, you know, embrace these genre trappings.
Well, I would. There are some people who seem to think that 1975's Toys, you know, Wolf Guy is a sequel to Toho's film, and I would say absolutely not. It's just the same character from a different studio. There's absolutely no continuity tie at all, right?
Yeah, I mean, even going to the source material, I don't think that it's necessarily continuity tied. I think it's sort of one set of novels and another set of novels, and both of them have a wolf guy who is named Akira Inugami, but, you know, he doesn't talk about, like, oh, one time I was in school and I had this hot teacher or anything like that.
Yeah.
And honestly, he seems more like a Playboy type of James Bondy type of if you've ever seen like Space Adventure Cobra, like that sort of, you know, almost like adventurous character, whereas in the young wolf guy, he's more, you know, chip on his shoulder type of guy.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. They probably should have, instead of doing young wolf guy and old wolf guy, they should have just done Akira Inugami and Akira Jin, since the old wolf guy is like, you know, more like Jin, basically.
Yeah. And apparently, Hirai wrote other novels that also have Inugami characters that are part of neither continuity. So.
Okay.
That's where this whole thing gets a little bit crazy. I did a rundown of yokai movies recently, and there was one Inugami related picture that was based on one of his novels that was not part of the Wolf Guy series, which was also from that time period. So he was on fire in terms of adaptations, at least.
Yeah. So I would really hope, since Arrow Video released Toei's Wolf Guy, maybe they'll eventually release Toho's version, and especially, you know, Arrow Video just also released Toho's Bloodthirsty Trilogy, so who knows, maybe they'll actually do it one day.
Yeah, I would really be stoked for that. I mean, I was happy with them to release both the Bloodthirsty Trilogy and the Sonny Chiba Wolf Guy, but you know, this wolf guy, I think, would be, you know, just one step up in terms of things that, wow, this blows my mind because it hasn't ever been released with the English translation before. Which
yeah, you know. And I think studios, or when I say studios, I mean like home media releasing studios. I don't think they realize what a brand name Toho kind of is. I mean, if Horror of the Wolf was just some, you know, Japanese special effects movie, maybe not so many Americans care, but there's a lot of U.S. fans that if Toho made it, you know, they're interested. They'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as if it's Godzilla or Mothra or something related to that, but, I mean, I still think there's enough interest that, I mean, for instance, when I saw the news that the Bloodthirsty trilogy was coming out, I think it was like one of the number one bestsellers in foreign films for a while. And I know that the 1985 Return of Godzilla, when it finally came to Blu-ray in the U.S., it was definitely the number one selling foreign film on Amazon for quite a while. So the interest, I think, is definitely there.
Yeah, I mean, certainly speaking as one of those people that would, you know, get anything with the Toho science fiction logo on it. I know I, you know, have it pre-ordered, and you know,
well, maybe
they're having those conversations. Who knows?
Well, I think what happens, and this is kind of the point of your Kaiju for Hipsters book, and it's kind of same thing with my Terror of the Lost Tokusatsu books, is when you've been a Godzilla fan for a long time, you've seen every single Godzilla movie, every Gamera, just every giant monster movie you can find, you eventually get that craving for new material bad enough that you'll go and check out these Japanese special effects films that don't have giant monsters, like Submersion of Japan, the Bloodthirsty trilogy, you know, etc. And you eventually get to where you want to see those, and they're actually pretty good if you'll just give them a chance.
Yeah. And, you know, if that comes out, I think it would be be synergistic and behoove maybe, you know, let's just say Discotech, because they're, let's be honest, the most likely studio to do something like that if they were to pick up that OVA from the early 90s, because
yeah,
that's another one that for whatever reason never released in the States, and it does have some nicer animation as it goes along and some great background music. It's a Kenji Kawai score, so you know he's nothing to sneeze at, and it goes off the rails in terms of all the things that happen in that OVA. There's, you know, Chinese secret agent were-tigers, and
yeah, definitely, yeah, that's why it's so different from Crest of the Wolf. You know, Crest of the Wolf is almost like a young adult novel. I mean, as bloody and violent and everything that it is, but it's kind of just focused on three characters, really, and then this OVA has, like, I don't know, like six main characters that we kind of follow. So definitely a different kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, basically we have the storyline where, I guess, the teacher, Miss Aushka, she's been, I guess, from all of the sexual assault, now she's pregnant, but she was kidnapped by an organization in order to lure Inugami out, and they injected her with some drugs, and that left her sort of catatonic. So now Inugami and Husu, the aforementioned were-tiger, are breaking into this organization to get the cure for the whatever drugs that she was put on. Does this sound right? It seems a little bit like a fever dream while I'm watching it.
Yeah.
But
what got me was the ending, though. You know, it's like they build up to this big battle, and then they just totally gloss over it. And then as though it's just a sequel set up, they say, oh, the wolves are howling because somebody has just died, and we don't know who dies, and they cut away. So it's like, are they just trying to torture us? Are they setting up a sequel? What's the deal?
Well, a lot of the time what happens with OVAs is they're done as a promotional material for a light novel or a manga series. So the idea is that you see this in the video rental shop and you give it a watch, and then you're like, oh, I want to know where the story goes. Time to pick up the novels.
Which, ah, okay.
Yeah, that doesn't really fly in translation a lot of the time, because, you know, if the novels were out there, I would I'd probably buy them. I haven't finished reading the first one, but I'd still be curious to sort of see where it goes, especially if I'd, you know, gotten the Cliff Notes version from the anime, and maybe some of the other stuff makes more sense. Like there's a gangster hitman that's going after Inugami, and his boss has a daughter that had plastic surgery to look like Inugami's teacher, and they never really follow up on that.
Now that really confused me. I was waiting for the payoff on that. Yeah, exactly. That was very strange.
Yeah, it's like that never went anywhere. And then he's got his own like sort of a member of his little crew of guys that's like a Native American tracker guy.
Yeah, and I didn't get where he came from either, so.
Yeah, so it's a lot of colorful characters, whereas, like, I know we're talking about, like, a middle school werewolf romance from the first movie. Like, yeah, that's more grounded.
Yeah.
But just as a monster fan, there are a couple of fun sequences of the werewolf. You don't see the transformations as much, but you do get, like, there's a nurse that gets injected with werewolf blood and goes on a little bit of a rampage. And then later when one of the characters meets with a tragic end, Inugami gets angry and wolves out himself. So get a few little monster sequences that are... Yeah, not the most amazing thing that you've ever seen, but also not a bad way to kill a Sunday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if they were to release that OVA, I'd probably snap it up because, I mean, at this point, OVA series like that are a lot like the Toho Tokusatsu movies from the 70s. There's a limited canon of them, so eventually you can collect them all.
But, well, maybe I shouldn't open this can of worms, but I thought it was interesting when he said that OVA is kind of part of the reason for their existence was to promote, you know, a novel that you could buy or whatever. I think it's kind of funny that the new Godzilla anime has, like, these wild, extravagant tie-in novels. And what I think is hilarious is I think what fans would really like to see is what's in the tie-in novels as opposed to what we're getting in the actual anime. Because the tie-in novels have, like, all these monster cameos. Like, they have Varan and Anguirus and Baragon all teaming up against Godzilla and this crazy stuff, which I think is what most people would really like to see, but instead they put it, you know, in the novels.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially for us obsessive types that know all of these characters. I think for the...
I do, since I just...
Yeah. go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to say, since I kind of halfway trashed the anime, I wanted to say I did actually enjoy the second one, the Mechagodzilla Battle City. Actually, the whole thing, even the non-monster parts, I actually thought I enjoyed it. It kept my interest. So I didn't really like the first one, but I liked the second one. So,
yeah, it's, I like them both, but I think I'm going to have to, you know, watch all three as a complete picture. To really absorb what all is going on with it, because it's very much a trilogy, and I think for those tie-in novels that you mentioned, that's definitely a thing where, like, us nerdy types are gonna want to see all of these monsters that mainstream audiences probably have not heard of.
Yeah.
But this so Amanda started reading those novels, and she basically says that, like, The equivalent would be if while the Lord of the Rings novels were coming out and we were, you know, seeing those, people would describe all of the crazy things that happened in the Silmarillion. We were like, oh, wow, that sounds like a great story. But, like, if you just sit down and read it, like, cover to cover, it's just, like, a lot of different unconnected incidents. It's not really a narrative, so to speak.
Sure.
So it's, you know, sort of almost like world-building notes.
Okay.
But I think it's... Sense. I think it's interesting that the third novel that they've been putting out appears to just be a novelization of the first movie. So I don't know what they're doing with it from that perspective, if they're doing it from a just as a comprehensive thing or what. But I would be all about a translation of that as well. Anyone who's listening and is in the position to make such things happen. Or the Planet of the Monsters manga that was in the online Shonen Jump series, which I understand is just an adaptation of the first movie with some changes. Like, usually manga that are based on anime are not particularly great, but as a completionist, like, you know, we've all seen all of the manga that were based on the Heisei Godzilla movies, right?
So. Yeah, those were interesting. Absolutely.
So there can be little changes here and there. It's like,
Yeah. But now that we're thoroughly off course, I will say something else about Horror of the Wolf. You know, you and I are crazy enough, we'll go to the trouble to figure out how to get to this stuff, or maybe some fans aren't. So if you want to see Horror of the Wolf, it's really not hard to get yourself an Amazon Japan account set up. I mean, they ship to the U.S. I don't think it's all that expensive. I definitely think it's cheaper to get an Amazon Japan account than it is to buy stuff on eBay where they really jack up the prices. So if you want to see it, set up yourself an account. You can order the DVD. Then you can, you know, buy the English version, Kindle version of the novel, give that a read, watch the movie. And that's how you get around watching Horror of the Wolf without subtitles and understanding it if you've always wanted to see it. So I think it's worth the trouble myself.
I think that makes a lot of sense, especially since it's a very close adaptation. Sometimes you'll get an adaptation where it's really loose and you don't really... You'll be like, is this really based on the same thing? But
it is really pretty much the same. I mean, all movies condense and they rearrange stuff just a little bit for the sake of the film narrative. But, I mean, it's all in there, aside from the epilogue that I described that kind of gives you some additional information. But it's worth it, in my opinion.
Well, I think they were also, you know, at a time period where they didn't spend a whole lot of time in pre-production, so they probably didn't rewrite the script.
there were only three drafts that I understand, and it says that they weren't terribly different. So it sounds like from the first draft to the last draft, it was basically the same.
So yeah, I'll have to track down a copy of the movie in Japanese myself, as I have yet to watch the whole thing. I've seen clips. Ironically, I've heard the soundtrack, because the soundtrack is floating around there, and you know, you can, you know, find it at convention dealers' tables and whatnot.
Yeah.
The movie itself is more elusive.
Yeah.
But is that one of the ones that they've done a re-release for the you know, they have those special Tokusatsu cheapo editions, or is it one of the ones that we have to shell out for the DVD for?
It wasn't bad. It's just you know, there's no DVD collector box for it or anything like that. Nothing elaborate. Mm-hmm. Just a basic DVD release. I want to say it was around $20 or $15, something like that. And then,
oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, and again, it's just, you know, shipping to the U.S. is more expensive than normal. But again, it's better than getting it for a really jacked up price on eBay, you know.
Right. Yeah, and it looks like if you're in Japan, you can get it on Prime Video for only 400 yen. So.
Yeah, and I tried to do that, and I didn't realize. I don't really understand why they won't let you do that in the U.S. Like, why can't you watch Prime Video rentals? But it wouldn't let me rent it in the U.S. for just one. You know what I mean? One view.
Yeah, it's all region locking.
Okay.
So, that's the. The unfortunate downside there, but...
Oh, yeah, I should probably say this, because, you know, for you and me, it goes without saying, but yeah, if you buy a DVD for Japan, you've got to have that region-free DVD player to go with it, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or do the hack or whatever you do to make your DVD player region free, which I don't know how to do, but I think the region free players aren't too hard to get anymore, not too pricey either.
Oh, very nice. I'm seeing actually the English edition of the second novel, which is not available on Kindle so far, unless they combine the novels when they release the Kindle edition. I don't think they do, because it says the second novel is 172 pages. But yeah,
is the second novel also by Hirai?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the whole series is by him, for okay. the various series. But yeah, I'm seeing, assuming that they're using the correct description here on Amazon, I'm seeing it for a used copy for only like 58 yen. So maybe instead of complaining about being out of print, I should have just checked Amazon for it.
You never know what you're going to find on Amazon. I even find like those rare German Godzilla DVDs on Amazon sometimes. So looking.
But yeah, it looks like the DVDs, they just have, you know, this sort of standard Toho DVDs, so it hasn't been re-released in like the, you know, they have those great collector sets with the posters and extra bonus features for a lot of the Toho movies. I think it's not quite up there in that echelon, priority wise, but maybe someday. But you know, it's something
that... Yeah, I don't quite understand their priorities on that, because like they never put out one of those collector boxes for War in Space, which I would think would be like prime for that, especially if they're putting out like Secret of the Telegian. You know, I would think War in Space is a little more high profile, so I don't really understand how they choose those.
Yeah. Well, maybe War in Space is... Maybe somebody's got a thing against the 70s.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I just wanted to throw it out there. Their last DVD collector box, this might be like the very last release and they're going to end it, is actually going to be the 1954 Invisible Man, which is interesting.
That's another one that definitely should get a U.S. release at some point.
Yeah.
It sort of fell through the cracks distribution-wise, because... It was, you know, a month after Godzilla came out, so it wasn't quite in that time period where all of the Japanese movies were marketable. But I think nowadays it would be nice. I don't know who the right vendor for something like that would be, but maybe, you know, if you had one of those Eclipse box sets with a handful of different lesser known fantasy movies, or how about one of those all of the Toho Mutant films, for an example?
Yeah.
But it's also interesting, getting back to Wolf Guy, that they are going with the more sort of fantastic elements with that, as opposed to the old timey science fictiony mutations, which I think that ties into with, like, when you were talking about the unmade Human Torch movies, that originally it was more of a science fiction bent, and then once the drafts started getting into the later Showa period, you saw more of just the fantastical, with the, whether it be, again, movies like House or the Bloodthirsty Trilogy or whatever. No more of the science stuff. We can just have monsters and have them have always existed.
Yeah, and that could have been something to do with the 1973 release of The Exorcist, you know, that they wanted to go supernatural as opposed to science after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a nice... There's a synchronicity in terms of the Wolf Guy story, and that he's supposed to be the last of his kind. And you see this in a lot of Japanese werewolf material, whether it's like the Mamoru Hosoda movie Wolf Children, for an example, because there aren't wolves in Japan. Wolves were hunted to death, basically, in the late 1800s, and I think declared extinct in 1905 or so. So you see that sort of echoed in terms of the persecution of werewolf people. So they're almost mythologized in that way as well. The wolf itself is a cryptid, not just the werewolf.
Okay, interesting.
But, you know, if the wolves are able to turn into people, then, you know, maybe that explains how some could still sneak around.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Japanese wolves are never as big or ferocious as their continental cousins.
Well, see, now that explains to me, because I always wondered why, I didn't really know that, and I always wondered why the movie started out in Alaska. I was like, how come they went to the trouble to have the movie start off in Alaska, and then he goes to Japan, so now I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, I mean, Alaska's like, probably the ideal climate for having a bunch of wolves running around. And it's also that nice remote thing where they can go and be free from people and society and all of that. That's where they return to at the end, right?
Well, at the end of the book, Akiko, the teacher, supposedly goes to Alaska. And also at the end of the film, like, Akira has like a lucid dream as he dies where he's back in Alaska. So kind of, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because in the Sonny Chiba movie, it also reflects on like that all of his family had died off, but in that case, they're definitely a remote Japanese village somewhere.
Okay,
so not a lot of continuity between them.
Yeah, I'm still gonna check it out though before too long, because I'm definitely curious now.
Yeah, and it's available, so by all means. And would extend that as a suggestion to any listeners out there. You know, check out the Sonny Chiba movie as a, it's more of a kung fu police procedural sort of thing, but the more werewolf-y type, the Toho movie's the way to go. So, fingers crossed, somebody picks it up and distributes it over here. So that's about all I had to say on the subject of Wolf Guy. How about you?
Me too. But I mean, we can always extend these podcasts. We could talk about what we had to eat at G-Fest last summer, things like that. But I mean, we should probably cut it. People have had enough of us by now.
Yes. I mean, feel free to leave a comment if you're really, really curious about the Godzilla burgers that they had at the Caddyshack themed bar at G-Fest. But aside from that, let's wrap it up, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kevin.
Thanks for being on.